Welcome everybody to the Locked On Lakers podcast. I'm Anthony Irwin. I'm joined by Pete Zayas. Pete, we are officially into the off season here. There might be like one or two acquisitions or personnel moves the Lakers might make from here on out. So we are fully into, you know, let's have some fun time of year. Some of the questions reflect that. Somebody's going to ask us like what our favorite kind of steak is later in the show. So get yourself ready for that. Also, I saw we can mark it down. Today is we're recording this July 14th. I saw the first tweet questioning whether or not the Lakers are going to make the playoffs from somebody from a different fan base.
I was wondering when that was going to happen. Yeah, they didn't particularly stand up too well to, you know what I like about that? So I block a ton of people on Twitter, and it's not like I'm mad at anything. It's just like there are only so many people's opinions that I can care about. And and when I see somebody being dumb on someone else's timeline, it's like, I'm going to catch this before I ever have to interact with this person. Yeah. So, yeah.
It was probably the same Jazz fan who hopped in the reviews today to give us a one-star review because probably they're a Jazz fan.
Probably so.
Losers.
Yeah, man. He looked like a... Never mind. Never mind. Carry on.
So yeah, we are at that time of year. The questions, like I said, reflect that. And by the way, send us questions about anything. We are at that time of year. You want to ask about food stuff? Ask me about food stuff. You want to ask Pete and I about NBA Jam? Ask us about NBA Jam. You want to ask us about movies and stuff? Pete loves Marvel movies. So ask away. we'll start, though, with the first question here from Visley32. Hey, Anthony, great work on the podcast. Thank you. Hope Pete is doing well. Pete, how you doing?
Thank you. I'm doing very well. All the way back, got my dogs back.
Hell yeah.
Which has been a sad part of, like, I've only been able to see them here and there for the last 2 months, and I just love my dogs. So I'm back to physically capable of walking in my 95-pound one. So, yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah, so pretty cool. Thank you for asking.
It's a giant dog.
Yeah, that's remember the jump scare? I think it was the first time I ever did a guest appearance on your show. And he's this like Weimaraner or Labrador mix.
Yeah.
He's like not, and just got this bark from Charlie Film Room made an appearance on the pod, scared the crap out of you and some listeners.
Yeah, that was a giant bark. I thought for sure you had like an actual wolf in your house. That was wild. But their question here is how it's a longer question, so I'm going to paraphrase. But how do we think the Lakers are going to manage LeBron James and Anthony Davis's load? How are they going to keep them healthy? How high a priority are they going to make that? Like if you had to choose between prioritizing keeping these guys healthy versus seeding, I think it's a pretty easy answer. It's a pretty easy solution here, but how would you go about making sure that they stay healthy?
I think there are some nights where, you know, you can bench one or the other and, you know, I think the West is so tough that, you know, people are saying 60 or 65 games for LeBron. I don't think you can do that.
No.
I'd like to see him in the 70, 72 type of range and probably AD as well. Part of that's going to be a matter of managing their minutes within games. You know, I think one thing that Pelinka did particularly well with this roster is it's pretty deep. Yeah. And with that, you know, the difference between 32 minutes a game and 35 minutes a game doesn't sound like a lot, but that's 10% fewer minutes over the course of an 82-game season. Yeah. You know, if somebody plays 75 games, that's what, quick math, 225 extra minutes per season. That adds up. That's the equivalent of a few games. And I think that is probably going to be the better way. Playing guys like that in the 32-ish minute per game range is going to be a better way of managing their health rather than sitting out a ton of games, even though that may be appropriate here and there. How would you go about that?
I would agree. I would say probably 60 man, it'd be nice to keep them in that like 67, 68 game range. But you're right. I don't think that they're going to be able to do that. The West is just so insane. The one thing, though, I will say is that because of how competitive the NBA is league-wide this year, those teams that are at the bottom of the lottery are going to be horrendous. Mm-hmm. Like the Knicks are going to be just awful. Charlotte is going to be really, really bad. Those teams that drop off over the course of the summer or over the course of a season and figure out that they are now and have the league tell them, no, you're in rebuilding mode right now. Uh-huh. Those teams are going to be especially bad. So it's going to be a little easier to rest those guys in those moments. Yeah. I also think because of their presences on the roster, like resting LeBron last year while he was on the court was just a non-starter. It couldn't happen. The mm-hmm. team wasn't good enough for that to happen. But right. AD is so good that occasionally, even while LeBron is on the court, his load is going to be a lot easier. The typical minute that he plays is not mm-hmm. going to be as tough next year. So I think that's going to be really important.
Yeah.
And this just kind of, you know, one of the, I think the major hole that you and I have identified on this roster is a point guard who can create out of the pick and roll or attack out of the pick and roll. Mm-hmm. It makes it that much more important that the Lakers over the course of the season find somebody like that so that they can carry some of the creative burden on the team as well. So I think those are the three key elements here. Is it's going to be easier. The teams that they play at the bottom of the schedule are going to be really, really bad. And then if they can add that point guard who can create a little bit, I feel pretty good about their ability to rest even while they're on the court.
I totally agree.
All right, let's go. Next question here. Dano_Laker writes, great job, guys. Who should start at the point guard and who and what order off of the bench? I think I know your answer. Is it Caruso, Cook, then Rondo? What do you think the coaches will do? Well, speaking of coaches, the little bit of news that we had today is that the Lakers hired Phil Handy. I think he will come in handy. Yeah.
No.
But I think he would have come in a little handier had they still had the young core on the roster.
Sure.
That would have been nice. But Darius made the point on Twitter, and I just kind of checked in after I was finished eating, and I saw that I fired off the exact tweet that he didn't want to see on his timeline. So sorry, Darius. But yeah, I think, look, AD is still 26 right. years old. The Lakers have Talen Horton Tucker on their roster, who is 18. I think he starts the year next year at 19, but he's going to need quite a bit of development. Kyle Kuzma needs to make a significant step forward next year. And then, you know, guys like Alex Caruso can still improve. And then, you know, Handy has the respect of LeBron, which is really effing important. So... Right. It was all around. It's a really good hire. Just the timing of it was something that, you know, made me kind of chuckle. It just made me laugh.
Sure. Sure. Yeah, no, he would have been a nice guy to have around with the young guy. But that said, there is enough that a good player development guy does. It's almost like, you know, why do you have a hitting coach for, you know, in baseball?
The
like
Bronx Bombers had a hitting coach.
Right. You know, like guys will, you know, certain things will slip in their form, whether it's ball handling or shooting or just different elements of their game. And Handy is regarded as one of the better player development guys, really strong understanding of biomechanics. Mm-hmm. So if you're, you know, shifting your weight a little differently than you used to, just a guy with that type of experience and understanding. And he's a guy that every time I've heard him talk, he really gets it on how to take theory into practical application.
Yeah.
So the guy that I look most forward to him working with is Anthony Davis, because one thing from watching tape is, and who knows, the guys don't always reach their full potential, but from watching tape, I'm watching Anthony Davis and going like, this guy still has more room to grow.
Yeah.
Which is a fairly terrifying thought. Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
But there's more there in terms of being a functional ball handler. Like, he does some really cool stuff with his ball handling ability and is capable of creating from the perimeter. There are some mistakes that he makes that can be technically fixed, right? Yeah. It's not a talent problem. It's a, hey, you're doing this a little bit incorrectly. So a guy like Handy, like even without the young core, if you can take Anthony Davis from like superstar to in the best player in the game type of conversation, that's probably more significant than he could have done with any of the young guys who are mm-hmm. still very early in their career.
Yeah, I agree. One thing I do really hope he works with AD on is the footwork he does before he gets a shot off. Like I've noticed that Davis has some lazy feet before he gets ready to shoot, and I think it's really impacted his ability to shoot, especially from deep. So,
yes.
All right, let's take a quick second here, and when we come back, we're going to come back and answer more of your questions. I just realized we didn't actually answer that guy's question. So Dano_Laker wanted to know what order we would list the point guards. So again, you and I talked about last week when we left off on the show, when it came to rotations, is there is the logical way to go about these things, and then the practical and the political way to go about these things. So logically speaking, Rondo is the third point guard on this roster, right? But politically speaking, not just as it pertains to Rondo and the coaching staff, but also with LeBron and Anthony Davis, right? Those are things that everybody is going to work together on. And in that respect, I think Rondo is going to be a little bit higher than we would like to see him. That said, do you still think it's possible that Rondo is seen as at least the second best point guard? Like, I think Caruso is far and away the best point guard on the roster. But do you think they'll see it that way?
I don't think Caruso is going to start. As much as I would like him, I think he's a good fit, and he would be my choice. I actually think who's going to start at the point guard position is none of those guys. Mm-hmm. I think it's going to be Avery Bradley.
Yeah,
if it would be my guess after his acquisition. He's a guy we've talked about this a little bit, but the front court ball handling ability, not just LeBron, but with Boogie and Anthony Davis, you don't quite need the same type of point guard. You can think of those Miami teams that had Mario Chalmers. Like, is Mario Chalmers a point guard? Norris Cole? Dellavedova. You know, he really thrived next to Kyrie, obviously. And it would be great if the Lakers could get a guy like that. But even Kobe with Derek Fisher, mm-hmm. those types.
Ron Harper.
They need somebody to defend the position. I actually asked Pelinka about this in the press conference that he did over a conference call, like about the construction of the roster with, you know, it being such a guard dominant league, but the Lakers having most of their playmakers in the front court. And his line of thought, it was twofold, and I thought it was interesting on both ends. One was that they have focused on getting guys who can stop the other point guards and mm-hmm. the other guard play around the league. So they're more defensive, and Danny Green certainly fits that bill. Avery Bradley is still a very good on-ball defender. He's not very good off of the ball, in my opinion. But that is the focus of the backcourt. KCP has some defensive reputation. Caruso is an above average defender. Lakers have pretty good defensive guards. Mm-hmm. Quinn Cook's not very good on that end, but Rondo is obviously a disaster there. And then he said that, you know, so that's the focus is on stopping them defensively while they attack from the front court, and that they'd have an eye on the buyout market, which is the second element that I thought was interesting. In terms of Rondo's level of importance, like, there's such a disconnect between what we think of Rondo and what players think of Rondo, right? Mm-hmm. I think that the players' opinion, like, have you ever had a friend who, like, he's a really good friend, but he was just bad at whatever it was, like talking to girls or his job, or like, you want to support your guy, right? And you are going to give him like the benefit of the doubt to a fairly significant degree. That's just the nature of people. When we really like somebody, we're going to give them the benefit of the doubt. I think Rondo is so well liked, and I do believe them, right? They have more access to the behind the scenes stuff. They're there, they're living it, they're traveling with him, and everybody speaks about his leadership. I'd be a damn fool to just be like, they don't know what they're talking about that.
Right.
But I do think that probably colors their opinion of what his
Rondo on the player
game is, right? Like, to me, somebody like Rondo, if you've got all of this wisdom and leadership ability, but you can't play on the court, you're a coach, right?
Right.
Like that's what we call a good coach. So I suspect that Rondo gets some political minutes early on in the season, and all I have to hope is that a Caruso, Quinn Cook, guys like that, so obviously outplay him that Rondo, you know, can accept a 11th, 12th man type of role. The coaches are able to do that. But I do think that the default position will be, you know, two shifts a game at the very least from him.
Yeah. I mean, the funnier stat of the year, I'm predicting, is going to be his on-off numbers. Like, it's going to be hilarious. And hilarious in, like, the meteor is hurling towards you and you just kind of have to chuckle kind of way.
Yeah.
Money Mike H. writes, "What's up, man? So now that the roster is starting to shape out, what projected seed do you see the Lakers at this point? And which playoff team from last year will miss the cut?" Money Mike H. thinks that the Spurs or the Thunder are going to be kind of knocked out. So we'll start with that first one. What seed? Now, do you think they'll prioritize seed? Do you think they'll care much about it?
I don't.
I agree.
I also think that this is a better 16-game team than 82-game team. I actually have Lakers at about the 5 seed. I hate doing predictions because unless you friggin' nail it, somebody's coming after you, right?
Yeah.
But I do think that that's about where they end an 82-game season with this particular roster. I think that they're, you know, they get past the first round, pretty much whoever they face. It'd have to be a really bad matchup. And then in the second round, you know, we'll see if they're a 4 or 5, then you're playing the 1 seed. But with the way that I think the top of the Western Conference shakes out, I don't think there's going to be a ton of separation from the best team in the conference versus the 5th best team.
Yeah, my dad asked me actually this at dinner. He asked me, "All right, so what seed do you think the Lakers are? Like, predict the top 4 teams in the West." And I didn't have a coin in my hand, but I just pantomimed flicking a coin up in the air, catching it and turning it over, because the West is so insane this year that, like, we're going to see the number 1 seed, I would imagine, separated from the number 6 seed or the number 5 seed. It's probably going to be like a game or two. Like, right. That's how insane this year is going to be. So in that respect, I don't know if we can really predict what seed they'll be. I'll say this. I would probably have the Lakers as like the 2nd or 3rd best playoff team in the West.
Yeah, like, I agree with that. And like with a you got LeBron and Anthony Davis puncher's chance against anybody in the NBA.
Yeah, yeah. I like the way that they're built. Now, you know, these things change over the course of the summer, but that's kind of where I would put them. And I think that's more important than specific seed anyway.
I think we need a 3rd guy. I think that like Danny Green is an ideal like 4th guy. Mm-hmm. And like, I think if we get a 3rd guy, whether that's from the buyout market or if it's next year's free agency, like that's the glaring hole for me, that Lamar Odom level player. He doesn't have to be a superstar like LeBron and AD, but that just seems to slot everybody else into much more natural type of roles. And I hope to be wrong about that. Like, right, we got LeBron and Anthony Davis, and that's a hell of a head start. If that's going to, you know, prove me wrong, these are the 2 guys that are going to do it. But I just think we're missing a 3rd guy.
Yeah. I like the new this version of the NBA where it's all duos. Like, it really, like, this Knicks, I don't know if I've ever really been this excited to go into an NBA season. It's so wide freaking open. It's going to be such a great league pass year where you just, like, every, like, it'll be a random Tuesday night and holy crap, the Bucks are playing the Sixers. That's going to be great. Or, you know, it's going to be
this. And you can even frame it in that, like, oh, it's Westbrook and Harden against Lillard and CJ McCollum, right? Like, and just these even individual matchups that are always fun to watch.
Yeah, absolutely. All right. Cage 729 writes, "Hey, Anthony, great show. I listen to it daily. Thank you. I know the focus is on Kawhi's decision at the moment, but some friends and I were discussing the possibilities if NFL and NBA got rid of the salary cap similarly to the MLB. What are your thoughts? And do you think it ever could be a possibility of the salary cap going away and how high contracts have become? Pete, hope you're feeling better. Glad to have you back." So one thing I always make sure to tell people, I always start this conversation with salary cap stuff, is that the salary cap, like a lot of the owners have gotten people to think it has something to do with parity. It doesn't. It has nothing to do with parity. They don't want those they don't want those contracts going through the roof. Like you could technically pay LeBron James $75 million a year in the NBA, mm-hmm. and it would be a good deal. It would be a solid investment. But I don't think that's happening anytime soon, especially given how valuable NBA players are. But I do think the NBA has the best. They've figured it out the best. I think baseball makes it tough. You know, if you're like a, I don't know. It's if you're a smaller market, like if you're a Rays fan, you go into every year knowing everything has to go absolutely perfectly for us to be able to compete with the Yankees, the Dodgers, the Red Sox, the Cubs, etc.
Right.
Right. So I get that, you know, and then the NFL having a hard cap makes no sense to me. It makes no sense. So the NBA having the soft cap that they do and telling owners, hey, if you want to spend on your team and go above the luxury tax, then that gets filtered back into the league. That's perfect for me. I like that combination of it. I think there are still things I would tweak about it. I think the Supermax decision was an absolute disaster, has been an absolute disaster to this point. But yeah, I don't see the salary cap going anywhere. How do you feel about that?
So yeah, I wouldn't be in favor of getting rid of the salary cap altogether. I do want to clarify that I'm very pro-labor in this, and the way that they split this up is, you know, it's like about a 50-50 split. It varies a couple of a percent in either direction based on certain factors, but so the teams have to pay the players a certain amount of money, even if it's not through contracts directly. It gets saved up into a pool and then distributed equally amongst all of the players in the NBA Players Association. So that isn't. So now it's just a matter of how do you do this in the most equitable type of way. The NBA is incentivized to have 30 teams that can have a chance, right? You brought up in baseball how certain teams have to, the small market teams have to have everything go right. Whereas in basketball, like the Lakers paid for a bad signing in Luol Deng, and they paid for a bad signing in Timofey Mozgov, right? If you're the Yankees, you can sign a Jacoby Ellsbury to a massive deal and not pay off, and that's fine because you got six other guys that are signed to massive deals. So I do like that you benefit or you are punished for the decisions that you make in the NBA. If I could change one thing, it would be the elimination of the max salary. You were talking about LeBron.
Yeah.
To me, now this will never happen because this only impacts like 20 guys, and this is the way for there to be a middle class of NBA players making $10 million a year, right? Which is, you know, an odd middle class.
And but even in the NBA, still, that's what, like you saw there was a report, I think Strauss wrote about this, right? Ethan Strauss wrote about this, that some role players throughout the league were kind of laughing at Chris Paul getting moved the way that he was. Because, he's the president of the players union right now, and he gets moved the way that he was. And they have been annoyed that the Supermax contract is actually taken away from the middleman in the guy at the middle of the roster in the NBA. But yeah, go ahead.
And that's the thing, right? And that's why it wouldn't happen. But for a parity sake, and this is something the owners don't want too, because you have a lot of risk built up. But if you want to pay, the salary cap is $110 million, you want to pay $75 million a year to LeBron, go for it.
Yeah.
And then build out the rest of your team with $35 million. That should be one of the options. It would also prevent some of the super team, because the problem when you've got a cap on what a max player can make is that they start making decisions based on other factors, right? If you're paying LeBron $75 million and you've got, you know, Anthony Davis available and he could sign for $50 million somewhere else, is he really going to take a $20 million a year to play alongside LeBron? I'm just using them as an example, right? But that would be the – if you wanted to kill the super team era, which I don't necessarily want to do, but if that's something that you want more parity from, that would be the quick way to do it. It'll just never happen.
Yeah, I would. Yeah, the couple tweaks I would make having to do with the Supermax is, okay, you can keep the Supermax, but the money, the extra money that a team can pay that player, I don't think that should count against the cap, right? Because that's part of the problem here is that, like, these guys are making, like, John Wall is going to make, what, like $47 million, right? Mm-hmm. And all of that counts against the cap. But if only like $30 million of it counted against the cap, that actually gives Washington an advantage to rebuff whatever risk is involved in paying John Wall $47 million. The other thing here, too, this is a completely intangible point to make, but I wish we would stop talking about players' contracts in their literal terms. Like, I wish we would stop talking about, like, so-and-so is a $12 million a year player, right? What I think would be better, where we would be better served, is talking about them in the percentage of the cap that they take up, right?
That's a great point. That's something that, like, you got to get used to, like, certain numbers, like 10 million, 15 million a year for this guy, right? Because Dude, I remember when like John Konkak signed for, it was like $1 million a year or $2 million a year. And everyone called him John Contract, right? Because he was this like big, this, you know, stiff, right? This 7-footer. And Chikrin used to bag on him all the time because of the contract. And he got a $1 million contract and a 5-cent jump shot, you know, and that's probably a better way to do it. It's just so much easier to talk in terms of those raw numbers. But yeah, like these contracts, they're, when you think of them as a percentage, they're not as bad as you think of it as like $15 million a year, you know?
Yeah. It would also help, I think, with the, with when we get into the lockout portion, like if whenever players and owners go up against each other, now it's, some of the sentiment has gone in the player's favor in recent years, some of it. But for a really long time, anytime there was any kind of a lockout, everybody got super angry at the players. And I'm like, why are we angry at the millionaires when the billionaires are the ones who are holding all the cards here, right?
Don't get me started.
Yes. Yeah. And I, you know, I think a big part of that I guess, grudging sentiment that a lot of people had against those players is, well, everybody knows how much those guys are making. We have no idea how much revenue owners are taking out of this league, right? You can't just easily Google that stuff the way you can with player salaries. And I think that's something that probably has to change as well. That was a long question. Let's take a quick second here. When we come back, we'll extend the third segment a little bit to even this out and get to as many questions as we possibly can. All right, so Lake_show wanted to know whether or when the Lakers are going to start adding more assistant coaches to their staff. We already saw that literally today with Phil Handy. To me, the glaring hole in the coaching staff right now is offensive tactician. I'm still waiting for that kind of a hire. Mm-hmm. Do we think that's coming anytime soon, or is that something that, you know, this? I think they have what, 3 assistant coaches, Frank Vogel. There might be what, 1 or 2 hires to go that we would actually hear about.
Yeah, so usually you have a front row of assistants and then you have the second row, right? Mm-hmm. And so usually 8 to 10 assistants on a team. And then you've got coaching assistants, which are people who help, who've got, you know, lesser roles. And I, you know, so we've got Hollins, Miles Simon was retained.
Another guy.
Jason Kidd, our favorite, right? Mm-hmm. Now Phil Handy, and this is going to be Handy's first row position. Mm-hmm. He's going to be one of the like main assistants, and I'm curious what his role will be, because usually your player development guy is a second row guy. So I'm curious of what, and that's going to be one of the first questions I ask Vogel, is kind of what is the structure. But yeah, that is the glaring hole. I mean, I do think they're going to go after somebody, because nobody that they have on their team really has that sort of reputation in terms of that being their responsibility. And so, like, it would make sense for them to do that. And I think the coaching staff is okay. It's a lot more experienced than the last one. Phil Handy is, in my opinion, the best person at their particular job, like the most competent and accomplished person there. But, it would make sense for them to do that. Did Lakers always do the thing that I think will make sense? No, but they're doing it more often. Like, they tried to get Ron Adams. They didn't get Ron Adams. But, like, okay, like, you went after the guy you were supposed to go after. I respect that. So I'm hoping that they continue that trend.
Yeah, I don't have any – I mean, I do have a complaint. You know, it's that Jason Kidd guy. How perfect would it be for Pelinka to tell Vogel, okay, Kidd is in charge of the offense. Kidd doesn't do his job at all. The offense winds up being terrible. And then they fire Vogel over it. And then Kidd implements an offense as soon as he takes over as head coach. Like,
Kidd waited a long time in Milwaukee to implement an offense.
I think they're still waiting in Milwaukee.
If you really want to get under a Bucks fan's skin, like, say some pro Jason Kidd stuff. Or, as I learned, compare Anthony Davis to Giannis. I had a bunch of angry Bucks fans. Like, someone was like, hey, do you think AD could be a ball handler, you know, like initiate? And I was like, yeah, that's kind of what I was talking about earlier. I was like, yeah, he's not that different than Giannis. And I just meant it in a, like, ball handler type of sense, like a very large human being who is extraordinarily capable of handling the ball. Boy, was that a mistake. I was like, I had no idea this tweet would piss people off, but here we are. So
that's my entire existence.
Yes. I'm less equipped to, I'm less patient for it, because I'm not trying to do it in the first place like you are.
How dare you? Pay no attention to the man behind the curtain. All right, next question comes from WordWiz 96 CIV. Some of you guys' names are wild. Anthony, your audio is fine, but fix Pete's audio. That's gotten a little bit better, I think.
I think so. I thought it was just that one show.
Yeah, I think so too. Love listening to you guys, but it's even harder when we can't fully hear. Oh, there wasn't a question. But yeah,
You got to leave this in. Don't edit this out.
All right.
You guys suck. Oh, I'm sorry. I was supposed to skip that one.
This is still a five-star review is the funny thing. All right.
Hey, thank you. Yeah.
Nick from upstate New York writes, I remember in one show you guys mentioned the Lakers not having a shooting coach. Now Kuz has one, Lethal Shooter on Instagram. Do you think his shooting will improve drastically? Sure as hell hope so. And there was some talk that maybe Lethal Shooter was going to be hired as the Lakers shooting coach. And then some of his, you know, social media posts were kind of hinting in that direction. I haven't heard anything on that front at all. So maybe, Pete, if you have, great.
No, I haven't.
So here's the thing about having shooting coaches is that a lot of these guys, especially now that the Lakers are employing almost solely veteran type players, the guys that they have on their roster are mostly all going to have their own shooting coaches anyway. The reason I was a little more annoyed by it last year was that the Lakers had a bunch of young guys who might not have been or who haven't been in the league long enough to have found the right shooting coach, right? To have found that kind of guy who I would really trust in that kind of a spot. So I thought if the Lakers employed a shooting coach just to make available, if any player is interested in going to that shooting coach, that would have been ideal. But I think it's going to be a little bit tougher with this roster because all these guys have been in the league so much longer. What do you think, Pete?
Yeah, no, I mean, I still think for the same reason as earlier where, you know, the same hitting coach in baseball analogy is, you know, Mike Trout has a guy telling him what to do with his swing, you know, and just having more eyes with expertise, that was not every team in the NBA has a shooting coach. In fact, I think there's probably 12 to 15. There may be more teams that don't have one than do. So there, it is not something where the Lakers are on this island and doing things against kind of standard protocol around the NBA. I'm of the belief, and I say this all the time, that's why I'm really happy to see Phil Handy coming along and Ron Adams coming along, is that this is one of the major advantages that the Lakers have is the resources to be able to just like kill it on your training staff, your medical staff, your assistant coaches. There's no salary cap on any of this stuff. So go for it. Really get the best of the best in your analytics department, all the way down to the hot dog vendors. That's what I always say, right? Mm-hmm. And this is the first time, this is the first offseason in a long time where I'm like, hey, they're trying, right? Like, I might not agree with every move, and it didn't start out great with, like, you know, there are arguments to be made for Jason Kidd, who I think was probably pushed for by LeBron in a lot of ways that complicates things, you know, in terms of the decisions that you make. Lionel Hollins has a lot of experience both as a player and as a coach in the game. It's definitely not a bad thing to have somebody with that type of experience. Now, I wanted expertise after that. They pursued Ron Adams for the defensive end. Didn't work out. Phil Handy has expertise. I hope they have one or more or two more guys coming down the line. But I do think that, like, overall, I'm happy with kind of the approach that they've had.
Yeah, it's gotten a lot better. And I think one of the things that they're kind of running into here is that because they have such an inexperienced front office that it's hard to identify some of these sometimes, right? They, like, maybe Kurt Rambis would say, but, you know, would have some input on who he thinks are good coaches. But I don't want them taking his advice on who he thinks are good coaches. I'm cool with passing up on that. So I think some of this is just going to be the experience of actually finding and identifying some of these guys and then improving your roster as you go along and improving the organization as you go along. I would have just preferred, you know, going back even further, that they did, you know, hire that experience so that that person would know these people and you wouldn't have to wait for this to happen, you know, 2-3 years into your time with LeBron James.
The one thing I think that this coaching staff, like the structure of it. I think they've got their CEOs and their upper management. Yeah. And I think they need some young guys. Like there's one guy who's been with the team for like the last 3 years, who's worked his way up, John Pastorek. He's like 6'10", I believe he played at Gonzaga. And he's now like, you know, moving up the ranks. They need those young grinder types to do a lot of the grunt work, right? Mm-hmm. And I'm curious to see who they bring along. There are guys around the league that are kind of the we got next of coaches as well. And the Lakers haven't really had that. Like, I don't think the assistants and the people they had under Luke Walton really qualified as like the best and brightest of the younger generation. No. Guys in their 30s, you know, that are able to do that type of work. So I think that's probably the next step beyond just a hiring one more or two more experts to run the offense, do that. You need guys, grinders, who can really do a lot of the grunt work.
Yeah, kind of the mortar of the...
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
All right, next question here comes from Captain Matt 8. Hey, Anthony, with AD becoming a Laker, what areas on and off the court would you like to see his improvements in? I'm definitely curious to see how his leadership develops with being with LeBron James and how he'll handle that responsibility once the LeBron era is over. Maybe this can be a show topic with Pete. We'll probably expand this. There's going to be plenty of time here to expand any one of these, any of these topics, so we probably will. I already talked a little bit about his footwork and shooting. I'm a shooting nerd. And, you know, some of the things that I noticed were, like, basically, just to put it in layman's terms, if you see somebody catching and then you see them taking the hop after they've caught the ball, that's not great. Like, that's not something I want to see. You want to see them kind of already in the air as they're catching that ball so that they have that momentum going in ahead of time, just because of how fast everything happens in the NBA. The other thing that would allow him to do is attack closeouts as he gets better as a shooter. So that's kind of where I would say I kind of put my two cents in this already. So Pete, where do you think you'd like to see him improve?
No, that's good stuff, and that's absolutely spot on from the tape. Is he does a lot of his footwork late, and that's something that will impact. He shot on catch and shoot threes in the high 30s. Forgive me for not remembering what the exact percentage was, but it was like encouraging, like, oh, hey, this guy can space the floor, 37-38%, yeah, something like that. You know what he shot on pull-up threes, which is any three in which he took a dribble beforehand? He shot 4.8% on pull-up threes. So there is, you know, his overall percentage was like 33.1 from three. So his dribble pickup is something that's very obviously that's where the issue is. If he's catching and shooting, fine, but if you add the dribble component, he can't make it. A lot of the guard stuff, a lot of the initiation type stuff, it's kind of pejorative to say he shies away from contact. He does not initiate contact in the way that you teach guards. That's one of the specifics that I was talking about earlier, where you really want your ball handler to initiate contact with the shoulder, and that allows a lot of options out of that. So I'd like to see, and Phil Handy's a great guy to have doing this and understanding the physical component of the game, especially when he attacks from the perimeter, and then just making passing reads out of that. That's something that he makes a couple of reads really well. He has open court talent as a passer that does not translate to the half court. And part of that is understanding if A and B happens, that means I pass the ball to C. So those are the areas specifically of development, along with what you said regarding his footwork on his shots.
All right, let's end this on a fun question. This is a 5-part question. Are you ready? We'll just do this rapid fire style.
Got it.
Wu-Tang Clan or Tribe Called Quest?
Wu-Tang.
Me too. Porterhouse or ribeye?
Ooh.
I go ribeye.
Ribeye, yeah.
I go ribeye. Merlot or Chardonnay?
Merlot.
Neither. I'm a Pinot Noir guy.
Okay.
Rolled tacos or lumpia?
Rolled tacos. I'm not a lumpia guy.
Yeah, me too. While we're on the subject, corn or flour tortillas?
Corn.
You're insane.
What?
You're a crazy person.
Flour tortillas aren't even real tortillas.
Well, the corn tortillas, like, they always fall apart in your hands. Like, they're just the it's the texture of them.
Maybe in your meaty little hands, they do. They're perfect for me. They're perfect size. They got a great taste. I don't know what you're doing to your tacos, man. But
although the tacos at the El Torito, there's like the fancier El Toritos where they actually make the tacos there. Those are phenomenal. Those are real, real
nice,
good.
Nice.
All right, last one. Pacino or De Niro?
Pacino.
De Niro. Pacino, like, at this point of his career, he just screams.
Well, okay, well, are we talking about right now or just, like, the breadth of
Entirety of his career, I think, like, De Niro had, like, the Fockers movies that were phenomenal. They were really, really good. I'm still waiting for that from, like, Pacino.
Yeah, like, what's the cop movie? Serpico? I don't know. I like them old 70s movies. Pacino was a hell of an actor once.
He was.
And so was De Niro. I don't want to act like De Niro is chopping.
Wow. Over, I can't wait to hop on Twitter and say you think De Niro's overrated.
Jeez. I swear to God, if you keep slandering me on Twitter, I'm going to unleash the fucking full force, man. You think Reddit hates you now?
That'd be phenomenal. All right.
You want this so bad. You know, that's going to be how I troll you, is that I'm not going to do it. Because you want it so bad. I can hear it.
I don't. I'm just shocked that you think you hate De Niro. Like, it's just tough to hear. Tough to hear.
De Niro and Powell. Those are the two things I hate, right? Right, Friggin' Anthony?
Exactly. All right. That'll do it for this episode of the Locked On Lakers podcast before Pete punches me through my computer. Have a great day. We didn't get to like a third of the questions here, so I'm going to continue to extend this into first. I'll probably do this again for tomorrow's show. As we get further into the summer and as some of these questions start to go away and we don't get as many of them, we do have some fun stuff lined up. We are going to start getting the player preview stuff ready for you guys. So I look forward to that. Thank you guys very much for your questions, though. And as always, if you guys have questions, send them in the form of a 5-star review. And I promise I will get to them. But for now, have a great rest of your day. Make somebody else's. We'll talk to you tomorrow.